You're listening to SBS On The Money with Ricardo Gonçalves.
Hi everyone, welcome to the SBS On The Money podcast for this Wednesday, the 11th of March 2026, a day where the Australian share market continued to recover after last week's falls. The ASX 200 up 0.6% today. We'll have the details with Josh Gilbert from eToro in a few moments, including what he's telling his clients. But first, while Brent crude is down from the peak of a few days ago, it's still up 30% on this time last month. Yesterday, both Qantas and Air New Zealand said they'd lift airfares in response to surge jet fuel prices. But what about those transport services on the ground? Taxi services say they are under pressure with fare increases inevitable. For more, Stephanie Youssef spoke with Blair Davies from the Australian Taxi Industry Association.
So Blair, what kind of impact is the rising oil price having on taxi drivers?
Look, it's very much a concern for our cab drivers. Something up to 10% of the cost of providing a taxi service can be in fuel costs. And so if we get a 10, 15, 20% increase in fuel costs, that puts pressure on the profitability of providing taxi services. That's true for our sedan drivers, but it's even more acute for our wheelchair accessible taxi drivers because the vans that they drive, they're much larger. We don't have the option of fully electric vans in Australia. In fact, we're only just starting to see hybrid vehicles. So they're normally diesel. They use more fuel. Consequently, increases in fuel prices hit them more acutely.
How about the cost of operating a taxi? How do they impact the operating costs?
Well, in the case of our rideshare friends like Uber and Didi, they can simply pass that extra cost if they need to onto the passenger because they set their own prices. But in the case of taxis being caught off or hired off a rank or hailed on a street, typically those prices are set by state governments and they're locked in potentially a year ago, maybe 2 years ago when the fuel was at a lower price. And so as fuel spikes, it very much impacts our cab drivers that way. And in the case of our wheelchair taxi drivers, most state governments will say that the fares that we can charge to wheelchair passengers are set and have to be regulated. So consequently, when the costs move dramatically, like we're seeing in fuel, it can put great pressure on being able to provide the service.
Well, we've gone from record low petrol prices to above $2 in most capital cities in just a matter of weeks. Those cost pressures, how acute are they considering how dramatic that time frame is?
Oh, look, as I think many people could understand, a cab driver is a small business person. It's a competitive market out there between the other cab drivers, all these rideshare drivers that are now out there, and the margins are not great. And so if you get a spike in one of your costs, it can be the difference between going out and being able to make a reasonable living. Nobody's becoming a billionaire driving a cab, I can assure you. But as we see rising costs, it can move some days from being profitable to being unprofitable. And that's a worry because that just discourages people taking cabs out onto the road. And we're an essential service. For people who need to travel by wheelchair, they sometimes can't get on a bus, they can't get on a train. They rely on those wheelchair taxi services to get down to the shops, get to doctor's appointments, get to our family and friends events. And we need to be able to provide that service.
So these price increases are because of global supply concerns stemming from the Middle East conflict. If that continues, are fare increases inevitable?
Oh, I think so. It's really whether this is a short-term blip or whether it's going to be sustained over some coming months. And in previous times where we've seen fuel spike for different reasons, state governments have come in and put a special levy in, maybe an extra dollar, while that fuel was spiking. But it usually takes state governments some time to get around to making those decisions. And consequently, the cab industry will need those state governments to be thinking about these things now, not in a month or 2 months' time, after cab drivers have been expected to wear the pain. And of course, as I say, we're in a competitive market out there. It's tough to be providing these services. And what we learned in the case of COVID a few years ago, some of the services that the community gets, say from rideshare, they're discretionary services. If the driver doesn't think they're going to make money, well, they've got other sources of income. They just go and work harder in those areas, and they don't bother providing a service to the community. It's the cab drivers that are out there on a full-time basis providing those essential services. And what we can't afford to do is see cabs not on the road because the service isn't viable.
So if fares do increase, how much do you think we could see them go up by?
As I say, fuel is just one of our costs. So it's somewhere under 10% of the cost of providing a service. And therefore, if fuel prices have gone up by 10%, it would make a modest increase to the fare. Even a dollar or two would be a useful addition for a cab driver trying to get out there and provide a service.
If these fuel challenges continue, could we potentially see an exodus of taxi drivers?
Oh, I think we'll see if COVID showed us anything, what we'll first see is an exodus of rideshare drivers. And then potentially we could see some exodus of taxi drivers if we find that demand was to decrease. And for example, if one of the responses from the rest of the economy is to encourage people to work from home, not to be out as much as they previously were, well, demand for taxi services reduces. If demand goes down, taxi drivers have businesses that can't make as much money as they did, so they might take a holiday or something like that. And that would be a very great concern for us because we are currently short of drivers. We don't want to lose any drivers out of the industry at the moment. Consequently, we'd hope that we'd be able to continue to provide those services. As I say, many of the services that the taxi industry provides, they're essential services, not discretionary services. So if we're not able to provide a service and have to reduce the amount of service we provide, it usually means that somebody in the community is being significantly disadvantaged. And that's a worry for us.
So that was Stephanie Youssef speak with Blair Davis from the Australian Taxi Industry Association. And Uber says it's actively monitoring conditions as they evolve and regularly reviews ways to support driver partners as circumstances change. Let's take it to the Australian share market now, where the S&P ASX 200 continued to bounce back following last week's vicious sell-off, the index adding 0.6% today to 8,743, led by the materials sector, and it means the index is now back in positive territory year to date. Today, BHP up 1.4%, Lynas Rare Earths a standout following a supply agreement with Japan. The retailers fell, but banks did well on higher interest rate expectations, which really ramped up today. It also supported the Australian dollar at 71.7 US cents at the market close. That's a three-year high. A number of banks are now forecasting two interest rate rises in a row from now as inflationary pressures appear to blow out. To find out more, I spoke with Josh Gilbert from eToro. Josh, so Westpac and NAB today change their interest rate calls, along with Citi predicting an RBA rate rise in both March and May. Westpac adding that the effect of higher oil prices on headline inflation is large and temporary, but the RBA Monetary Policy Board will nevertheless feel compelled to react given the hit to confidence and financial markets has so far not been severe. So can we break that down? Firstly, what's the market's view on rates?
Yeah, well, I mean, straight away, this is not coming at a good time for the RBA at all, right? We've sort of really seen the path for the RBA shift within the last sort of 12 months. So ultimately, inflation was already running above target before we sort of saw this conflict begin. We also had a labor market that was tight. So what we've seen is add in an energy shock into this. The expectations of a rate hike have risen significantly. Markets are now pricing in what is a 56% chance that we get a rate cut next week from the RBA. And we also had comments this week from the Deputy Governor Hauser, and he kind of tipped the scales almost, if you like. He kind of signaled that the board is really serious about acting sooner rather than later. So look, I really don't envy Michelle Bullock's position at the moment. I think she's got one of the toughest calls since sort of taking the job on her hands next week. And ultimately it does look like we're going to be seeing another rate hike from the RBA pretty soon.
And so just clarifying, that's a 56% chance of a rate hike next week. Is that right?
Yeah, sorry. Did I say cut?
Okay. All good. We got that clarified. It's all good.
Sorry.
Why do you think the hit to financial markets, though, has not necessarily been so severe as Westpac points? And I guess the ASX was at a record high in February. And despite those huge falls we saw last week, the 200 is basically where it started the year.
Yeah, so I think you mentioned a point a moment ago about sort of these big banks sort of seeing this as not long lasting. And that's the point, is that markets are sort of treating this oil shock as temporary rather than something more structural. Long-term inflation expectations are actually sort of remaining stable, which tells us that ultimately investors and markets think this will be resolved and supply will normalize. And also, if we look to Australia specifically, it's actually a net energy exporter. So higher oil and gas prices actually improve our terms of trade, if you like. And that's a genuine advantage that most other countries don't actually have. And we're also seeing rebounds when we see de-escalation, right? And that's really important for investors to remember, because history tells us that some of the strongest days in markets actually come right after the worst ones. And being out of markets during those rebounds can do more damage as well to long-term returns. So there's a couple of reasons why we're not really seeing the full effect come through. One, because we're getting, you know, those rebounds. Two, because markets are treating this as temporary. And three, you know, Australia actually does quite well, you know, by being a net exporter of the commodities that are doing well in this environment.
We're still seeing a lot of volatility, though. The oil price, especially overnight, is a great example. It tumbled around 12.5% and then rose 11%. So double digits, which is relatively rare, but that happened in the space of a few hours. What does this say about investors' sentiment at the moment, given they're reacting to any small tidbit of news that we get?
Yeah, well, you're exactly right. You know, and ultimately markets hate uncertainty, and we've got so much of that at the moment. You know, the markets are being driven by headlines, and those headlines are turning, you know, all the time. And the numbers that you just went through there also tell us that volatility is really high, and that's almost the price of entry into markets. And that's really important for anyone looking at markets right now, because that's not going to change for the time being. And I think for investors sort of watching from the sidelines, there's a little bit of, you know, angst of entering the markets at this point. Normally in a sell-off like this, I think we see dip buyers stepping in quite aggressively. The appetite for that at the moment is a little bit more cautious. And I think that's just coming from how quickly this outlook can shift. And that is understandable. No one has a clear picture of how this conflict ends. So until there's some sort of sustained clarity, expect more volatility, more headlines, and you know, not a time to panic, but it's a time to stay disciplined.
So how's this all playing out on the currency markets, especially the AUD and US cross? Because I think it's at a 3-year high there.
Yeah, well, we already saw the Australian dollar doing really well before this tension, just because of the expectations of, you know, rate hikes coming through, and that almost imbalance between, you know, where the Fed were sort of heading, looking at obviously rate cuts, whereas the RBA was obviously moving towards rate hikes. As I mentioned, Australia benefits from those higher commodity prices as well. As we mentioned earlier, that net energy exporter. So that in terms of our trade improves. And then on top of that, as I say, RBA hiking rates, moving into this, that makes the Australian dollar more attractive relative to other currencies. The Fed is in a position where rate cut expectations are being pushed back. And the US is actually the only, you know, economy, developed economy, where traders are actually fully pricing in a cut over the coming year. So a significant difference. So I think when you combine, you know, better terms of trade with, you know, a big, obviously, interest rate differential, we're obviously seeing some strength coming through there for the Australian dollar.
So with all of that we've just discussed, what are you telling your clients right now, and where do you see the opportunities for investors?
Yeah, that's the big question, right? I think what we tell people at this time is boring can be brilliant in times like this. Defensive dividend-paying companies, you know, your Woolworths, your Coles of the world, you know, they've been doing exactly what they should do. Woolworths is up actually 30% this year, right? Where the most of the market has been thrown around by headlines. We're looking for strong balance sheets, reliable cash flows. One area of the market outside of that that we do find particularly interesting right now is cybersecurity. These stocks got caught up in the broader software and sort of AI sell-off earlier this year. But for us, the investment case there is actually strengthened. Geopolitical tensions don't actually just play out, you know, in warfare anymore. It's sort of cyber warfare as well. We've seen already in this conflict that start to happen. And as AI becomes, you know, really central to everything in our world, the demand for cybersecurity is only going to accelerate. So, you know, businesses, governments, et cetera, they're going to continue to spend there regardless of the economic cycle. And we think the sort of sell-off or any weakness in that space will become opportunity.
It's Josh Gilbert there from eToro, and he wraps up the podcast for this Wednesday. Don't forget, if you enjoy it, give it a rating or review wherever you listen to the podcast, including Apple and Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Give it a subscribe, and we'll chat tomorrow.
This SBS On The Money podcast is provided for informational purposes only. Content on this podcast should not be understood as constituting advice or a recommendation. It is not personal advice and does not consider your personal circumstances or objectives. You should contact a licensed professional before making any financial decision.